The Police Federation official podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Police Federation official podcast. As ever, we're joined by the National Chairman and a variety of guests over the weeks discussing all manner of issues. 2019, of course, is the 100 years since the Federation began, and there's lots of topics to talk around that. And, of course, the Federation and issues they want to share with you, the membership. Everything from pensions to pay, campaigns to conduct are on the agenda. I should remind you, of course, you can send in questions anytime via Twitter or email, and we'll include as many of these big topics as we can over the coming weeks. Alongside John Apter, the National Chair for the Police Federation, we have Simon Kempton back with us, operational policing lead. Good to see you both again. John, it's been for the police, I mean, what an incredible couple of weeks when it comes to getting a police force to do big things. And I'm talking about looking after the President of the United States or everything that went around D-Day. I mean, it's been incredible.
It has, Ian. It's been policing's busy anyway. It's relentless. But these extra demands, they really have stretched us. But it's been fantastic. I mean, the events have only just finished. And I think it's fair to say that as far as policing's concerned and the official state visit and the D-Day commemorations, they've all been a massive success. And I've spoken to many officers from all across England and Wales who were involved in the operations. And it's been, really well received, the way that local federations on the ground have dealt with it, some of the things that certainly Simon has been working on behind the scenes, all come together. And I'm not going to say it's not stretched us and it's not put us under massive pressure. But on things like this, the eyes of the world were on us. We step up and we do our best.
Because from a police perspective, you're not just dealing with each force aren't making just their own decisions. You're dealing with a foreign country's force, Secret Service, and all that goes with that. You know, how do those guys do it? Can you replicate what we do, or do you do it better than how they do, etc.? You've got an armed contingent to think of in terms of cars that are mooching around the UK that are suddenly, full of all sorts of security measures as well. So there's quite a lot, isn't there, Simon, to think about?
A huge amount. For this event, there was something like 14 or 15 heads of state, so it was extra layers of complexity. But, of course, everyone concentrates on Mr. Trump, as they would.
Yeah.
And the Secret Service bring just a huge amount of protective detail with him everywhere. He lives in this security bubble, and that has to be able to work properly and effectively with UK policing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he won't be safe. And our members were just awesome, absolutely awesome. And I have to give a shout out, John's already mentioned it, but the local federation and Leicestershire Federation, we all just came together to make sure that welfare of our members was right at the heart of this operation. Learned some lessons from last year and got some real wins for our members in terms of overnight allowance, accommodation, proper feeding, welfare. Really good operation.
So is that a time, John, when leave is cancelled?
Yeah.
Unless you've really booked in a holiday well in advance, then I'm assuming you ain't going away.
No, and in some cases, officers have had their annual leave cancelled. I mean, that's extreme, but it's becoming more and more common. But on an event like this, and especially with, and I would say this, but it's factual, with almost 22,000 fewer police officers, there are fewer officers to be called upon to police these events. So their rest days get cancelled, they work exceedingly long shifts. And for an official state visit, 9 times out of 10, our colleagues don't mind, as long as it's planned properly. It's a bit like, in November getting told, oh, Christmas is next month, we're going to cancel your rest days.
Yeah.
Well, if you know something's happening, then you have to plan for it. And Simon's completely spot on. When it comes to dealing with other heads of state, to a certain extent, you're in the hands of their security detail and their planners overseas. And on some occasions, we will be told very last minute a change of plan, which means we have to move officers or cancel their rest days. And sometimes, for operational reasons, we're not told the full detail.
Yeah.
And that can be really frustrating.
And it must be, again, just to go back to the kind of pressure that is on. I've always thought the British police officers seem to, well, certainly we don't see it as members of the public. You don't see the pressure. But you are, again, when dealing with an operation of that magnitude, and particularly if you're, I don't know, you know, an outrider or something in that sort of thing. I noticed one of your former colleagues in Hampshire
Rob,
last shift.
Absolutely.
Right in front of the Queen's car. What a wonderful way to finish your policing career.
Oh, brilliant. Just quickly on that, I mean, Rob Hurd, Sergeant Rob Hurd, I've worked with Rob for many years because we're both on traffic together. And Rob's an exceptional individual. He's done loads of stuff, actually, about elderly drivers, making sure that they're getting better support and in regulations. But I met with Rob only a couple of weeks before the D-Day celebrations and commemorations. And he told me what his role was going to be. And he was one proud man.
Yeah.
And a top bloke.
There's a cracking photograph of him right in front of the royal car and the Queen in the back. And said to my other half, I said, if that's not up in his dining room in the next couple of weeks, I would be staggered.
I would expect him to take his wedding photos down.
Put that up. Just there. Beautiful.
It is a fantastic photo.
But these, you know, we forget these are extremely skilled drivers. They know, you know, top to bottom what they're doing. You're not just escorting a car.
No.
I mean, you've got a whole number of things going on in your head when that's happening.
Absolutely. So you're thinking about, and you've got constant comms in your ears, but you're thinking about the route ahead, what's going on around you, what your plan is, what your contingencies are. And it might not be the right time to talk about it, but you've talked about the skill of police drivers, and that touches on something else that the police are trying to effect change with, to protect police drivers when we use our training.
Which we've talked about on previous episodes, of course. You know, the difficulties there.
John's absolutely right. We've lost 22,000 cops, so not just the Trump visit or the D-Day celebrations, but more and more we're having to rely on things like mutual aid, which is where one police officer gets told you have to work in another part of the country for the next day, week, several weeks. And because of that, that puts extra pressure on the guys that they're left behind because they have to pick up the slack.
Yep.
And it takes them away from their family and it puts them under financial strain, which is where things like the overnight allowance are so important and so crucial and actually so necessary to try and reflect what those officers are having to go through. And some of them, they get sent on mutual aid and they're actually at a financial detriment because they're having to pay for childcare unexpectedly and this and that. So that money isn't a sweetener. That money is necessary to make up those losses.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, let's get on to entitlement under regulations and the like. I mean, just broadly, what does this area deal with, Simon? I mean, this is a point you know lots about. What are we talking about here?
So I've got the privilege of leading for the Federation on overnight allowance. And the first place I'd start is overnight allowance is a misnomer, because whether or not you're entitled to it has got actually very little to do with whether you're away overnight. It's more to do with being whether you're held in reserve, which is what regs calls it.
Right.
And held in reserve basically says you're required to stay in a certain place for a certain period of time in case you're needed at a moment's notice. What has happened previously with both Trump visits, with the Salisbury incident, with the Commonwealth Heads of State, with the British Virgin Islands incident, is regulations have got an ambiguity built into them, by design or otherwise, and the Federation have had to step in and negotiate on behalf of our members that they should be given these payments. And I have to say, hand on heart, we've been bloody good at it. We've got our members their entitlements time and time again, but we're having to negotiate. And one of the things I'm pushing for is a clarity to regulations and a change to regulations, so that if you're sent away because you're ordered, you have to go and work in another part of the country, that you should be just entitled to these payments. So I'm working with chief officers to try and get the right balance so that our members are remunerated properly.
Yeah. And this is a good example, John, isn't it? When people say, you know, cause like in any organisation, there will be cynics around and go, well, what does the Federation do for us? I mean, there's a classic example.
Absolutely.
If there was no Federation, then, you know, individual officers would have to be they either wouldn't even be aware of some of those entitlements.
Absolutely.
Or they certainly wouldn't know where to begin to start the laborious process of trying to get them.
Absolutely.
The Federation step in at times like this. That's precisely one of the big things that you guys do.
And regulations are really complex. They're really detailed. It's like our terms and conditions. And police officers, very few officers know that in detail what they're entitled to. And Simon's completely spot on, certainly with regards to the overnight allowance. He stepped in, he negotiated, he made sure that officers didn't feel that pain that they felt last time. But regulations are far broader than that. I'll give you a couple of examples. Regulations defines what overtime rates you'll be paid, if you get cancelled rest days, in what circumstances that's acceptable. We have something called an exigency of duty. You can't have your duties changed with certain notice periods unless there's an exigency of duty. There are 43 definitions of an exigency of duty,
wow,
which is deeply frustrating. I would like there to be a national definitive
answer. Almost one for every police.
Absolutely. So we're looking at that. And let me give you a small example, because I've been pushing this Did You Know campaign, like, know you understand your rights for police officers. So if a police officer is injured in the execution of their duty, and as a result of that injury, they have medical costs, such as, I'm not talking private treatment, I'm talking dental treatment, I'm talking prescription charges, maybe hospital parking charges if they have to go to hospital, they are entitled under police regulations to claim that back. A reasonable, a reasonable claim is to claim it back. Many officers don't know that, and I do get some chiefs who say, "Well, you know what, John? Out of the goodness of my heart, we're gonna pay that." No, it's police regulations; it's law.
Yeah.
And I was approached by
no one's doing anyone a favour.
Absolutely, and we'd put this out on social media about understanding your rights. And I met with an officer in the Met, and he'd said he'd seen this. He'd gone to his Fed rep and said, "Look, I've got some claims that I want to put into." You know, recognise that this is under regulations. And these were medical costs. And he got several hundred pounds back. But, you know, it's regulations. Oh. It's not a nice to have. It's the law.
And Simon, who do you have to deal with when you're trying to get some clarity on it? Is it chief constables? Does it go to the Home Office? Where's your point of contact?
A bit of everything, actually. But my first phone call would be to the National Police Coordination Centre, MPOC. MPOC are like an offshoot of the National Police Chiefs Council, and their job is to coordinate the movement of police officers around the country when they're needed for mutual aid, whether it's a football game or large-scale disorder, yeah, and anywhere in between. And because of their respect for the Federation and their willingness and desire to work with us, I'm normally pushing against an open door when we want to get a better set of circumstances for cops who are being sent here, there and everywhere. On a wider scale, when I'm looking at long-term changes, that would normally be either with the Home Office and or with what we call the Police Consultative Forum, which is different stakeholders, mainly chief constables and the Home Office, and they look at what changes we might be able to make to regs around pay, conditions, this and that. And in fact, I'm feeding into them as we speak with our secretary, Alex Duncan, trying to effect change for our members there so that they're entitled to better conditions.
Are chief constables receptive to all of this? Because there's always a sort of cynical belief, you know, the old chief constable, they've got their eye on that next job in the Home Office. They're, you know, it's the poacher turned gamekeeper kind of analogy. Is the relationship good between the Federation and some of these guys?
Generally speaking, yes. In terms of that particular group, the Consultative Forum, The former lead on it, Francis Abgood, has just retired. He's been replaced by a chief constable called Matt Dukes. Seemed like a very decent guy. He seems receptive. The issue we got, though, is very often we can't negotiate with one chief constable and then the other 42 fall into line. Very often we need to get at least a consensus, if not all of them agreeing to what we're trying to introduce.
Sure.
So that can build some delays, really frustrating delays.
Yeah, that's not a straightforward journey, is it, in that respect? And any officer that's listening to this who's thinking, well, look, you know, I genuinely think I've got a whole bunch of issues here. I've had it marked in my diary. I'm not sure I got paid correctly for that. I'm almost convinced that something different should have happened here. Well, what do you say to those officers listening to this? What should they be doing if they're not sure?
First things first, if you go onto our website, if you look for quick reference guide, there's a downloadable PDF there that explains, I was going to say really simply, but as simple as regs can ever be, explains it really well. But what they can also do is speak to their local rep, speak to their local branch, because they will be able to make those arguments and representations on your behalf.
It's only right and proper that we look at another issue here, just as a kind of final point, but we can get into quite a bit on this as well, including, you know, new Prime Minister territory as well. But let's just talk about the outgoing Prime Minister. I think we did your first national radio interview, John, as chair.
Yeah.
It was one Sunday evening in a beautiful studio in the middle of London. And, I mean, the phrase, you know, giving the PM both barrels really came to mind here, because you didn't hold back on what you felt Theresa May was responsible for, both as Home Secretary and as Prime Minister. And I think a lot of people sat up and thought, wow, this guy clearly means business here, because you weren't about to kowtow to the conventions here. And, you know, although you were diplomatic, some might say, you were absolutely forthright in what you felt about her track record when it came to policing.
Absolutely. I for the damage that this Prime Minister, she's still, albeit in name, the Prime Minister, but only just. My thoughts on the Prime Minister and the damage she's done to policing have been with me for some time, and I wasn't going to change my views just because I got this national position. My moral compass would not allow that. So yes, I'm pleased that she's decided to move on. For the sake of policing, this is not a political statement. It does not bother me at all what party she leads. Just so happens she's Conservative leader. But the damage that she's done, both as Home Secretary and as Prime Minister, to policing has been incredibly bad for us, incredibly. So I need to look at, I'm a diplomat, you know, I want to have a good relationship. It's interesting you said to Simon, do we have a good relationship with national chiefs? I didn't take on this job to be popular with chief constables, but it's good to have a good relationship.
Sure.
And it's the same with politicians. So my plea to the candidates, whoever is going to be the Prime Minister and the new cabinet as it will be formed, is my door is open. I want a constructive relationship with the future Prime Minister and with cabinet, in the interests of policing. Well, that doesn't mean to say I'm going to roll over and have our tummies tickled. You know, policing is on its knees. Yep. Violent crime is up. The public is suffering. The public have made it crystal clear that policing and crime, how we deal with it, is important to them. It's a priority. Whoever the Prime Minister is, it's got to be a priority for them.
And I think you're absolutely right. You're spot on. And I've said before publicly, and I'm really clear on this, the government's first duty is to protect its citizens, full stop. And you don't protect your citizens by decimating policing to the point that we can't answer 999 calls the way that we want to. We can't investigate crime the way we want to. And my plea to the next Prime Minister, whoever they happen to be, is to reverse those cuts so that we can protect the public on their behalf.
I've got no doubt that the Prime Minister, maybe the Chancellor, well, most definitely the Chancellor, have had an awful lot to do with the damage that's been done to policing. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors at number 10, but what I do know is that my passion for policing, the reason why I'm in this role, is to fight as hard as I can for a fair hearing for my colleagues and for policing in general. I just want a constructive relationship. It doesn't mean to say we're always going to agree.
Which role is most important, though, from a Federation perspective? Is it who's the PM, who's the Chancellor, or who's the Home Secretary?
Well,
the latter you'll be dealing with most.
Yeah, I think in the dim and distant past, it would have been the Home Secretary, because you had how the government used to work was the Home Secretary would make decisions and they'd be supported or not by the Prime Minister. What you have in the current climate, personal view, but many share it, is that you have the Prime Minister and the Chancellor who are ruling the roost. It's their decision. They set the tone of government. So for me, I want a good relationship with all of Cabinet and their advisers and the civil servants. I genuinely do. I just want to be able to see decisions that are made fairly. And, you know, not that cynicism. I'm talking about politicians and, you know, they've not got a great name at the moment. But on behalf of our members, we've got to recalibrate that relationship with government, because at the moment it is broken, certainly with number 10 and number 11. I want to recalibrate that.
And that's it for this. We're out of time. John, Simon, thank you.
Pleasure.
Good to see you both. That is it for this episode. A reminder that if you've got any questions you want to put to another episode or issues you'd like to see raised, you can follow the Police Federation on Twitter and, of course, email via the website as well. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. If you do that, whoever your podcast provider is, then you'll get each new episode automatically. They are totally free. Hit the subscribe button now. And, of course, you can listen via the Federation website too. Until the next one, goodbye.